the setup. It's kind of hard for me to. I made some changes up here. All right, we're recording.
I didn't see the 3, 2, 1. Okay. It's episode 31, correct?
Yep.
All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Welcome, No Spinners, to episode 31 of No Spin Rodeo. We're glad you're joining us. It's hard to believe that we're 31 episodes in and the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo is now on everybody's minds. I want to welcome the real stars of the show. We've got Greg Teagarden managing all of the technical side and the First Lady of Pro Rodeo Journalism, Kendra Santos. Good morning, team. How are you on this wonderful pre-Halloween? In case you haven't noticed it, they started putting the Halloween decorations in all the stores about a month and a half ago. So if you haven't got your Bone Man, you better go get him and get him taped up in on your door. How are you guys? Welcome.
Well, that's exactly what I did yesterday. I did all my decorations. Went and got a Bone Man. Yep. Hung some purple lights and made it a little scary around the house. So.
Well, my daughter-in-law just talked my wife into going to TJ Maxx to get Halloween decor, and now there's random-ass leaves everywhere where she's hanging. It just looks like a briar patch all over where we've got leaves and orange and green. And also, we also learned up here, we're up here in Utah for the fall colors because if you live in Texas, and I think I've said this before, it goes from green to dead. And you don't realize that there is actually orange leaves. And so my wife and I go and look at the colors in TJ Maxx are real. And if you live south of Oklahoma, it's green or dead. So there is the decor conversation that we're handing off to you, Kendra.
Well, we're rural enough that we don't have trick-or-treaters here, so I did not go all out with decor for Halloween, but did just have a beautiful wedding in my front yard.
You did. Did you get the tree limb out of the way? Everything was cool?
Did not. The tree limb, which weighs a literal ton, is still down there. My son Taylor and Jordan Tierney just got married, but they were planning to get married where my other son Lane and his wife Jane got married down in our pasture under this hundreds of years old oak tree. But a couple days before the wedding, a huge part of it came crashing down, which thank God it did not happen on wedding day. But we made a pivot and just came up to my front yard and did it on the lawn, and it's all good.
Well, congratulations.
Great vines in the background, and everybody survived, and it was really fun. Really fun having a lot of people here from South Dakota and Nebraska. I think, everybody thinks of Oat as being an Okie, but really he's a South Dakota boy. And it was really fun bringing together a lot of cowboys and Midwest people and Texans and Okies and Taylor's dear buddy, Stetson Vest, NFR tie-down roper. He was the officiant. Is that how you say that? He married them and he was amazing. And, it was really personal and really cool. And when Taylor made his first NFR in 2019, he jumped in with Stetson and Shanae, and they had a brand new baby girl, Stetley. And so to be trying to make your first finals and in the living quarters with a tiny, tiny baby, it was really cool. They became really, really close, and it was a lot of fun. Very, very personal. And Taylor about got me when I walked down to take my seat, and he had the end seat. He had my dad's cowboy hat and my dad's jacket on the seat, you know? And I was like, oh. But it was super cool. And his best man was my other son, Lane. And it was just a really personal, cool, happy time. So that's my big
thing. Congratulations to you and your family. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is
congrats.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, there's a lot going on in the rodeo world. We will kick it over to our expert in rodeo lineage and all things rodeo, Kendra Santos. She's probably been working on this for 12 hours. I put in a good solid 15 minutes. So let her roll, Kendra.
Well, the big three since we last met up were Puyallup, Pendleton, and Mandan. And I've been paying close attention. What I do is I hit record and then I watch these things without commercials. I whip through them, and really, because I'm apt to watch a replay 8 times maybe or whatever. But since Oat was here, there's closed captioning on my television and I haven't figured out how to get it off. And it makes me crazy because have you ever tried to watch a TV with closed captioning on it?
Well, no, I go ahead and hit the button and turn it off. Now, I will say with all the different streaming platforms now available, which I don't know if you use streaming platforms or not, but there's a lot of different ways to get rid of closed captioning. But it drives me.
I'm sure you can hit a button, but I find it very distracting. Anyway, Puyallup, I'll just say, okay, $484,000 added first week of September, huge impact rodeo. Jess Pope made a huge one over 16,000 and made a huge, I don't even know why Jess Pope wasn't in the top 15, but he made a huge barnstorm at Puyallup and shot up there. JD Strexness, Coleman Proctor, who's making the all-around race super interesting, just won the all-around at Cheyenne and Pendleton. He and Logan Medlin won the team roping. Ryder Wright won the bronc riding. Shad Mayfield, still killing it, won the calf roping. Ashley Castleberry, the barrel race. Trevor, is it Reese or Rice? We need to know this name because he's been winning a ton in the bull riding. I'm not sure. Well,
I've heard it. I'm not going to take announcers what I've heard to be the fact on that. Maybe we should look into it.
Okay. Well, anyway, so Pendleton, I watched really, really carefully. 405,000 added. Another huge impact rodeo, just the 11th through the 14th of September. So a few of the highlights. Weston Timberman is absolutely killing it right now, right? He just won Mandan also. But he clinched his first NFR. I think he actually clinched it at Pendleton. I thought a cool side note was that his Uncle Kelly won the 100th anniversary in 2010 at Pendleton. And now the nephew, Weston Timberman, who is a rookie, he's hot, hot, hot. Ty Harris and local Preston Peterson split the calf roping at Pendleton. And I really enjoyed... There's some beauties of being as we age that you know things that maybe not everybody knows or see things. But I thought it was cool. Like last year, it was the most touching, heartwarming story to see the Sori boys go 1-2 and steer roping, at their local hometowner, right? And this year, so Preston and Michael Peterson, a couple brothers from nearby Hermiston, Oregon, they both made the short run in the tie down. And it was, there's such a twist here that I don't know how many people are old enough to know this, but lucky me, I am. So four of our cowboy friends died in a small plane crash on Mount Rainier in the summer of 1990, July, a 4th of July run. Mike Curran, Dave P. Smith, David Bowen, and Randy Dearlam. Well, Mike Curran, he and his brother Tony went to Cal Poly with me. He left behind a young wife, Judy. So guess what? Preston Peterson's mom is one and the same, Judy, who used to be Judy Curran and is now Judy Peterson. And she's Michael and Preston's mom. Michael, obviously named after her first late husband, Mike Curran. Anyway, their dad is Curtis Peterson, who's a dear friend to the Curran family. But I just thought, watching, which now, of course, I'll always watch as a rodeo mom, but watching, and I thought, our point of view today is about emotions and to imagine what Judy Curran Peterson has been through in her lifetime. And I know how great she is about cheering for everybody else's kids and being happy for the rest of us when our kids win. To see her have a day like that, that was really extra special. The breakaway, Cody Fuller and Kelsey Domer split Pendleton. It was the fourth year breakaway was there. There was a lot of talk this year about the breakaway repping on the grass. And a lot of people, a lot of the Cowboys were saying to me that they think the breakaway might be the most treacherous because there's nothing when you pull back, like there's nothing to hold you up. And so I had an interesting conversation with Coleman Proctor, who again was the one all around there. I think he won fourth in the team repping and second in steer repping there. But he said the number one thing at Pendleton in the timed events on the grass is do not pull on your horse. Like, let them handle it. Let them handle their footing. But there were a lot of major slips in the breakaway. But I thought that was kind of interesting. Like, at least in the calf roping, you know, there's some sort of a balance point, right, on the other end of the rope. But that is a fair point in the breakaway. Anyway.
Well, and by the way, real quick, for those that are listening and don't know why, it's because they play a rodeo on grass. It's solid grass in Pendleton, which is what makes it unique. And when you're done with Pendleton, let me slip in because I'll tell you the things about Pendleton that I thought was interesting. But back to Pendleton. Okay. But it's on grass, everybody. They're rodeoing on grass.
Yes, it's the high school's football field, literally. So anyway, okay. Aussie, Jake Finley, winning Pendleton, the bronc riding, on Sankey and Phenom Genetics, the black tie, 91 points in the short round to clinch it. That was so cool. And seeing our friend Janie Johnson, Janie Finlay, she was there. And one of the coolest pictures I saw was the two of them hugging. They're expecting a baby girl here pretty soon. And over the top cool about that particular story, I thought was Lefty Holman, he sent some of his grandpa Witch's ashes along for the ride with himself, Lefty, and with Dawson Hay, who's married to Lefty's cousin Lily, and with Jake. And
how does that work?
So Lefty sprinkled some of his grandpa's ashes. His dad, his grandpa used to travel with Chris Ledoux, John Holman, they called him Witch. Pendleton was his favorite rodeo. So like those three guys took Witch for one last ride at his favorite rodeo, and Lefty sprinkled some ashes on those horses' butts and in their saddles. And then when they went out, whether or not people really knew what it was, here's some of Witch's ashes flying, and knowing what a character Witch was, I just thought that was so cool. And when my kids were going to the high school rodeos, that whole family was there, and Witch was always there, and he would always show up, and he would pass around mason jars full of moonshine to the parents. And so I thought, you know what? Cheers to Witch with his moonshine, because I thought that was extra, extra cool.
I saw them sprinkling stuff, and I'm like, and of course I didn't take the time to read it, and I'm like, what is going on? Is that something new? Is that a new fad? So I'm glad to know that it was Witch that got sprinkled.
So cool. He would love that.
I bet he would.
Okay, the bulldogging. So last year, this is rodeo. We're talking about emotions again today. Last year, Jesse Brown, former college quarterback, got knocked out and got a terrible concussion at Pendleton. Well, this year he won it. And so that was really super cool. I mean, he could have taken a major head trip with him there, but he rose to the occasion, and this year was an opposite of last year in a good way. World leaders Dustin Egusquiza and Levi Lord got the bucket list win at Pendleton. They are now in the driver's seat, though that's a close race, as are most of them. The winningest barrel racer of all time, as far as money goes, Lisa Lockhart. She mastered the Green Mile on her horse Cutter. And Trevor, again, Reist or Reist? I'm guessing Reist, but I don't know for sure. Won the bull riding.
I think it's Reist.
Okay.
I think.
And he's now ninth in the world. There's some new names. Another new name. Trenton Johnson won the steer roping. I don't yet know him, but he's – from Kansas, and he's third in the world and headed to his first NFSR in November. So very cool for that. Okay, the trifecta, the third link of our big three here since we last got together.
Let me talk about Pendleton.
Okay.
Let me give my research on Pendleton. Should they give the bullfighters increased pay for having to protect all of the people that think it's a good idea to sit in the grass behind a PVC fence in the bull ride? So this is the kind of stuff I bring to the table. This is hot news. But the amount of, like, I think it's really cool if you have the ability to post on social media from your camera a bull going through the PVC fence right in your face, and then your camera going to the ground, and then being able to pick it up. But I do feel sorry for a little bit for Webb and those guys that went in and got hookings, right? They got hooked in those situations. Yeah. And so maybe we ought to consider, like, who gets out on the grass? Do they sign releases? I'm just saying, hey, that's a dangerous thing.
I've wondered about the liability. I don't know how there's enough liability for, you know, I mean, what was it? Bill Lawless, a couple, two, 3 years ago, kind of an older gentleman photographer, wonderful person. He got very seriously hurt out there. And they must sign mega releases, and they must stand for something in Pendleton, Oregon. But I don't know. I agree with you. I think it's cool. I think it's so much fun. I've gotten to watch from out there and all that. But when I see people putting on social media, like, they think it's funny that they, like, take the PVC deal down and wave red flags at bulls and stuff and try to get people hooked. I don't know.
All right, so do you go out there? Do you sit out there in the grass?
I have been out there, but I have I don't know, self-preservation instincts, and I'm not too prideful. Like, if one's headed my way, did everybody not see the media girl get mucked out a couple years ago, completely shit-assed? And that I just would not want to embarrass my kids for having to have them stop the rodeo because their mom's KO'd out on the grass. But to me, I have a respect of it. And yes, I have been out there, and what a rush, how cool. But I think it's going too far when I see people, like, take the PVC down and think it's funny and push people over it and all that kind of stuff. Because when those bulls come over there, that's no BS.
Well, preservation tactics, does that mean you strategically sit next to someone mildly overweight? Oh, bulldoggers. Yeah.
Bulldoggers.
Because they're probably not going to get out of the way and get hooked. And
no,
you're going to...
No, because bulldoggers have physically, literally picked me up and started running with me. That's because who they
See,
are.
That's
they're big
not
enough
fair.
To do that.
Because if I get there, there's no bulldogger going to pick me up and run with me. So I'm going to find the fat guy. I'm going to find the most overweight person and hope that I
and
can
offer him a free red T-shirt.
Yeah. Okay. Onward.
Okay. So the North Dakota Rough Rider Cup just paid out $506,879 yesterday, Sunday, September 22nd. Interesting that legendary PBR stock contractor Chad Berger put that on, which you and I both have been around Chad Berger quite a lot in our PBR days, but also he bought, remember Dan and Linda Russell? They bought a place in Shakota. Well, so now every once in a blue moon, I'll run into Chad Berger at the local coffee shop in Shakota because he bought their place. And so in the wintertime is around, you know, gets out of the cold country, I guess. But anyway, I'll zip through the list of winners because it has a lot to do with riding rodeo's emotional roller coaster point of view. Western Timberman strikes again. What else can I say? By the way, for over 18 grand. That's a big deal. Tyler Waggis back. That's the headline news for me. He won 14-5. He won the bulldogging. Reigning champs of the...
Let's talk about Wags. real quick before we jump on, because I did.
He's coming up in point of view. Are you sure you don't want to wait?
Well, I better keep my 15 minutes worth of research on that. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so reigning champs of the world, T. Wade and Wesley Thorpe, won over 15 grand in the team rep in. Stettler Wright won just short of 18 grand in the bronc riding. The calf roping, Dylan Hancock from San Angelo won that, almost 15,000. Tiana Schuster, 12.7 for winning the barrel race. The barrel race was wildly fast, and it was so tight. It was a tiny margin between people who won some money. The bull riding was TJ Gray, who won almost 18 grand. Breakaway three-way tie, world leader Josie Connor, Bailey Bates, who was 16th before that event, and Danny Lohman. They won 6,800 a piece.
Wasn't it a three-way tie in the breakaway?
Yes, those three. Yeah. Josie Connor, Bailey Bates, and D'Lo, about 6,800 a piece. Okay, so my smoking gun question here is why the rough stock events paid so much more if it was the same number of entries, and you have the answer, and I want to know what it is.
Well, because the entry fees on a limited event are set up through the rule book, and the entry fees in rough stock can be significantly more than they are in timed event. And they were significantly more entry fees in the rough stock. So the added money was the same. You add the additional limits, right, of contestants with more entry fees, you get a higher payout. So there was nothing nefarious there. Okay. That's straight up. Now, one might ask, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm glad to hear that it was equal added money. That's great. And obviously this is a case where each event decides on their entry fees. Okay. And okay, I'm cool with that. The first thing that comes to mind on that is, how would it be fair for how it might impact the all around race if say a Wacy Shala or a Stetson Wright can win 18 grand in his event, but you know, Waggis Back or you know, one of these other timed eventers can win 14 or 15, and say if they're all in the all around race, then I'm like, they both get to count the rodeo.
How many professional bareback riders are there in the PRCA, if you had to take a guess?
A fraction of the others.
80? And that's it, by the way. The bareback riders that have a card are literally, really, the only guys that can ride bareback horses that I've seen. Like, well, I don't mean stay on, but ride. And how many bulldoggers or headers and heelers? So my point is, there's a demand for rodeo committees because there isn't as many. Now there's a lot more bronc riders, but specifically in bull riding and in bareback riding, there's not as many of them, Kendra, right? It's right. And there's a reason that there's limited bareback riders, because it's a special skill set. I'm not saying that it's better or worse than a bulldogger, but it's a special skill set. That's definitely, in a lot of cases, harder on the body. And so the prize money, it's just demand. It's just like, it's capitalism, right? You sometimes have to spend a little more money to make sure that you got the bareback riders there, because there's less bareback riders. So
it's supply and demand. There's not enough supply to go around. Right.
So I think you should tell Coleman to hook up with Casey and learn how to ride bareback horses.
Well, where this might in the very near future come quite into play, Sassy Pants, is Wacy Shala, who's in the top five, 18-year-old rookie this year, who's going to the NFR in the bull riding. He was 20-something in the bareback riding last time I looked the other day. So this could very well come into play. If he can win more, everybody gets to count 70 rodeos for the all around. If he can win more per rodeo, I mean, that is kind of interesting.
Well, I think that these guys that are pretty good at rough stock ought to look at, like Frost, you said. I mean, it's to me, I think the all around race is cool. I think it's much, much more appealing to me. I guess I think, because I'm more of a rough stock guy, you're probably more of a time event girl. I think it's really cool, those people that are rough stock and time event. Like, I think to me, that's the true definition of all around. Now, I'm not taking anything away, so I don't want to get hate mail from qualifying for all around and timed events multiple. I get all of that. That's fine. But it is cool, right, that a guy can ride an undomesticated animal for 8 seconds and then get off and ride a very highly trained domesticated animal and with precision, because it's a different level of precision on a bareback horse. You have to be just as precise to hit those feet right and not get thrown off. I get it. But the precision and the timing of slack and all that stuff in the timed events takes unbelievable amount of practice. So I just think it's the real all around to me is a guy that can do those two things, Linderman, right? That thing, I think is just cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I feel that's, you know, as we all know, there were so many more of those kinds of guys back in the day. And now it's become mostly predominantly single event specialists, you know, in every event, really.
Yeah. And that's because the money's going up there and you need to focus. And I get all that. That's great. I think we're moving in the right direction. I think we're moving in the right direction. And I thought on Mandan, you know, there just was a lot of going into Mandan. Listen, you know, I'm in favor of do or die situations that I think favor more, you know, hardline focused competition. And I believe at the end of the day, the cream rises to the top. I think luck of the draw and different things like this can definitely play into it, but it plays into it all year long. Typically the best usually rise to the top, and one-off wins don't typically get you a buckle as far as I can tell. And so I think we're still okay, but there was a little bit of, how did you get in Mandan? Who qualified? That would be, that should be cleaned up, right? If they're going to continue this event, because if you're going to create a playoff series, tour playoffs, this needs to be palatable for all of us, more specifically, the players. We've always said that.
Yes. And that's a great point, because I did have a number of cowboys say to me that they felt like they had no idea. There were, you know, if you watched it, you noticed there were some people that we're not familiar with. A lot of cowboys from both ends of the arena said to me, we had no idea at the time that rodeos, like, I think they said Aberdeen and different things, if you won that, you automatically got a buy. And they're like, we did not know that. Or we would have gone, right? And so I don't know. I can't speak for sure of how that happened or how they didn't know, but they so many people said I had no idea at the time.
So what was this? What was the qualifying criteria? I know you. I mean, was it a cinch playoff? Because isn't that next weekend?
I don't think it was I should have researched this, but I'm pretty sure it was not. I don't think it was a tour event. I don't think. Okay. I don't think it was a tour event. It was a high money regular season event. Now, I could be completely corrected on that. I apologize. That's bad reporting. I don't know, but I don't think. And there were six small rodeos, similar to what we did in Salt Lake. We released this year in Salt Lake that, you know, the days, Utah Days of 47 Rodeo put extra prize money into the six smallest Utah events. I'm getting somewhere with this, Kendra. And we said that the winners of those small events from the WPRA's perspective would qualify for next year's Utah Days of 47 Rodeo. Well, we're in discussions about where we're going to land in the PRCA tour. So all of those conversations, Kendra, I had to rekindle, because I said, hold on a minute. If we start to become, you know, if we start to reformat this, I want to stick with it for a while. And by the way, remember, you already told six girls that won these small events that they're in, and are you cool with that? So what I said was, if we end up going a direction where we have, I'm making it up, 40, they come to the Salt Lake because of our problem with keeping slack. You know, if we have 40, then it'll have to be 46 in those events. I'm just to address what you're saying, right? That if it's 40 on tour points, then we're going to have to add six others that qualified outside. Now, the good news is they were all made aware, right? The WPRA did a good job in saying, look at these six small rodeos. But back to your point, I don't think a lot of people knew, including players, which you just solidified, the mandate. Now, I think they'll correct that next year because I hear this event's going to happen again. Good news. Yay. Right? Evidently, sponsors were happy. Fans were happy. It's going to happen. That's good. Another $500,000 in the – that's all great. But clean that up. And what I hear from my insiders is that's the intent. Fix all that, Kendra, so that everybody knows how do I get the Mandan. It becomes an end of the season.
Right. And I think that's a general comment that the players have long had, you know, as far as with the PRCA, that even the players who this is their livelihood, this is what they do every day, things often change from year to year so much. You know, do you have to, whatever it is, do you have to official a circuit rodeo for it to count for the world standings? You know, these kinds of things, like this year it's this way, next year it's this way. And it's confusing even to the players who are the ultimate experts. And so if we don't have continuity or consistency somehow, some way, getting this out and getting it out with enough time to where you can adjust your game plan, if that needs to happen. Maybe Aberdeen isn't on most of these guys' playlist, and maybe it would be. I don't know.
Agree. All of that's great.
By the way, could you go to, say, I'm not picking on Aberdeen at all, but could you go to that rodeo unofficial it, but if you win it, still get to go to Mandan, for example?
Well, I would say that here's the deal. If all of that was documented somewhere, I'm assuming it was, then it becomes the individual responsibility of the athletes to find it. It should be easier for them to find, but I'm assuming, this is an assumption, that all this was documented. Because if you look at all of these big money rodeos that have popped up in the last 10 years, my problem all along has been you got to maintain credibility, right? You can't, you know, we've had this conversation. You can't change the rules once you start playing the game. When you start qualifying people, I don't even care if the rule's bad, right? Right. It was a stupid, we should not have done it this way. But once someone competed with that set of rules, I maintain you can't change them. You should tell the players, bad rule. That was a really bad policy or rule or whatever it was. And we'll fix it the next time we start a new game or a new season in our case, right? You know, so that it's fair. Because if you enter and play in a qualifier, and this was the criteria, and then they changed the criteria, all credibility's lost.
Right, but as Bobby Moat pointed out in our last episode, these privately held, for example, the WCRA, they can pivot and change from one event to the next. They can change. They can completely overhaul the rule because they can. The PRCA, it might take 2 years if it's not expedited to change a rule. We all know that.
So my question to you, is that fair? Is that fair? Now, if you're changing rules event by event and it only affects that event, right? If it just affects that event, but it seems to me that I'm asking you, is it fair to change the way you qualify? Let's pretend like it's the American. And you start qualifying one way and you find out through a rise up of the grassroots that the way the qualifications are, and we really need to fix this. Is it fair to the people that played on the first set of rules and mid-season to change them, even if it's a good idea? Is that fair? No, it's not fair.
No.
Okay, we're on the same page.
Well, that's where, you know, there's the PRCA, you know, sometimes it's there, they are slow at a turtle's pace. But on the other hand, it took a very long time of evolution to come up with this rule book. And so I think on the flip side of that, people would say, well, it should take a lot to overhaul the rule book. It shouldn't be a knee-jerk reaction. So, there's two sides to every story. Go ahead, Greg.
So I'm looking in the business journal here, and I'm seeing the qualification criteria for the North Rough Rider Cup, and reading it is, it doesn't make it much better than what we're hearing, because it's got all kinds of first place winner from here, first place winner from qualifying rodeos is already qualified and has been accepted to entry among the top 32. I mean, it gets a little convoluted here. So, but it's basically, documented. It is documented. It's basically the top 32 based on 24 money won in the 7 days prior to the entries closing. So,
plus how many rodeos?
First place winner of each of the following four Badland Circuit rodeos. It doesn't show which ones. It doesn't say which ones, or I'm not seeing it. Well,
that's weird.
Yeah. And then it's also the ones where, you know, if this person's already in, then it's this person. If that person's, you know, it's not very
clear. If you qualify two ways, right. But that stuff's complicated, because I've been a part of it. That is hard. If two people qualify the same way, what's the criteria for the next qualifying person to get in? And that stuff's complicated. It sounds simple when you're sitting in your living room watching Cowboy Channel, but it's not.
Oh, here's the qualifying rodeos. Dickinson, Mandam, the July version, Aberdeen, and Rapid City.
Well, Kendra, I've always been for an opportunity, and I think the WCRA is an example of this, an opportunity for someone that doesn't dedicate their entire life and credit card to rodeoing. If they're able to win enough to get into the big game, they get to. I like that. I think that breeds new blood, and I don't think that's bad. I think it has to be documented and sorted out. And here's the thing that I think we need to take into consideration. The PRCA, the WCRA is better at this, and the PBR is good at this, but the PRCA manages contestants and rules. We've said that all along. They're not a marketing group, right? They're that's not their forte. And a lot of these things that we're talking about are the lack of marketing these events and getting the information out, marketing it both to fans and to the players, and a little effort, right? Which we've said all along, Kendra, communication. We work really hard here in No Spin to get people on to just clarify this. Because sometimes when it gets out, people are like, well, there was nothing bad about that. Well, yeah, but they don't do a good job. The PRCA doesn't. And they probably would admit this in marketing, right? Or in quote unquote communication. But to me, that's marketing the event. I didn't even know. It wasn't until a month ago, maybe, that this Mandan event was even on my radar. Was it on yours? I mean, like, when did this thing pop up? And especially something with such this changes the game, and we hadn't heard about it.
Well, and that's the commentary that I'm getting from a lot of the players, where they're saying, nice to know now, when I didn't enter any of those four rodeos that were automatic qualifiers or whatever, you know.
That's going to get cleaned up, and it needs to, right? And it's a slow process. You know, they go through a year and they realize, boy, maybe we should have told people that there's a few rodeos you should go to if you want to get into this $500,000 event, right? I mean, hey, you know. Okay. Well, now the next big one, and I skipped feedback, but we'll do that at the tail end of the show. Okay, cool, guys. We'll do that. I don't want to skip feedback. But the next big one, which I think – now, did you get all three of your big ones? You had Pendleton, Mandan?
Yep.
Okay. So the big thing coming up, which I'm going to – are you going to be there, Kendra? Are you going to the Governor's Cup?
No.
Okay, I'll be there. So I'll be your I'll be the no-spin liaison. I'm sure they'll give me a credential, and I'll wear like a media pass hat or something. And you know what I might do? I might do like they did at the Democratic convention. I might dress undercover, like wear something undercover and like creep around behind the chutes and see if
dress I can like get Kendra.
Some. Yeah.
Are you belittling my colleagues and myself or?
No, Would you be opposed to me dressing like you and showing up as Kendra and seeing if I get any bigger scoop than I would get as Tommy Joe?
All you have to do is wear the same jacket you've worn for 35 years and you'll fit right in. They'll think you're me.
Well, I think it's interesting. And so the little bit of research I did, rolling back to WAGS, you know, I thought it was interesting. I don't know, so I'm asking you, because you may know the details, the torn bicep, okay? Was that a bicep tear or was it a ligament torn off the bone? Do you know, Kendra?
Okay, so WAG is poster boy number one once we hit into POV. Are we hitting into POV right now? Because WAG is coming hot right here.
Well, whatever you want.
Yes, because I do
let's
know.
Roll into it.
So, but let's just preface it. So point of view today, riding rodeo's emotional roller coaster. This is the perfect time. We're all on the bubble. You know, the end of the fourth quarter, we're right there at the top 15, NFR cut, finish line, do or die. So it's the perfect time for this conversation. The king himself, Trevor Brazil, has always said that you need a short memory to make it in rodeo, right? And rodeo's emotional roller coaster is real and it's really extreme. And you don't want the highs to be too high or the lows to be too low is how every cowboy ever has put it to me. Basically because you don't want your last run or ride to affect your next one. And so I just thought if we would just hit on a few of rodeo's, you know, most common emotions that get drummed up, especially at times like this, when we're approaching the finish line, it would be something fun to do and use some current illustrations. So to your guy, WAG is back. So let's go with the thrill of victory. WAG is back. I mean, five-time champ of the world, reigning champ of the world, went to Mandan in 21st, wins it, and left there 13th. So on the emotion, when we're talking about this roller coaster, so obviously he's ecstatic. But imagine if you're, say, Tanner Bruner, Scott Gunstner, Justin Schaefer, who's trying to make his first NFR, and you just got leapfrogged at one rodeo right at the finish line, and you're now 16th. And so on the emotions, like, it's everywhere in every extreme that we turn right now at this point in the regular season. And remember, was it when we were kids, was it ABC's Wild World of Sports? And they would say the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Well, the agony of defeat, like these other guys, WAG, let's talk about him. Okay, so at Sisters Oregon, which is, I believe, is it in June? Anyway, it was a freak accident when he tore his bicep, and he was coming out. He was holding the saddle horn and tore it and then had to have surgery. So that was just a freak injury, and he came back sooner than expected. But, you know, he was way down, you know, in the 20s or whatever in the standings. But
Hold on, though. So let's get back to my point a little bit here. I know it's really bad for the guys that got leapfrogged, and I hear you kind of, but you just got to go win.
I'm not saying it's bad for them. I'm saying it's hard for them. It's not.
It's probably emotionally hard, but you just got to win. But anyway, let's talk about WAG's bicep. This is my. I've done a lot of research on this.
Okay.
Do you know? Did you know? So he had surgery, which means that he had probably a tendon pull. Probably had the distal tendon pulled. The average recoup time on that is 4 months. A tear, which is not a tendon pull, which doesn't require surgery, is 10 weeks. So here's what I'm saying. Go get them, WAG. You just beat a 4 month recovery. I'm sure he's still in pain. He probably shouldn't be pushing that bicep, but he is. You want to know why? Because he wants to win worse than the guys he leapfrogged, probably.
So, WAG is back is a freak of nature in many ways, but his mental, he was born like that. He was born believing that he was going to win. And even when I get kind of a front row seat, because Oat talks Wags Back all the time. And even a week ago, before this amazing win just happened, he was not worried about it. He's like, well, you know, the plan is to go win Mandan. And if I don't, I'll go home and regroup for next year, because Wagspec does not have Sioux Falls. Well, he's just not worried about it. When he shows up, his expectation is to win first. And while we're talking about emotions, let me quote my friend Ty Murray. Toots, jealousy is a very ugly emotion. And if you don't think that Wagspec doesn't have detractors who do not enjoy or appreciate his confidence, to me, I'm kind of like, shame on you if you're like that. I mean, how can you? It's one thing to envy him, because mental strength comes more naturally to some than others. But how can you not applaud him and stand in awe of him? Jealousy is, to me, the pot shots I've ever heard about Tyler Wagspec were straight ass jealousy. And that is uncool. That's not cowboy to me.
Well, all of the pot shots that you hear now are all derived from people that wish they were as good as the others. That's the truth, right? The nature of our game in this game is everybody that funds the sport needs a rule put in so that they can get a blue ribbon. You got to be great. He's great. You got to push the limits. He pushed the limits. Those are the guys that I'm like, mm-hmm. And by the way, little pro fantasy rodeo insider tip. I've taken Wags every year. Yeah, that's a good
pick. And you don't have a tattoo.
and I don't have a tattoo. That's exactly right. And there's a reason, because it's the character of some of these people. I mean, you can, like, I respect Wright for making the right decision. Pardon the pun, and saying, I'm going to do this when I can kick everybody's ass again. And that's just, those are the things to me, right? I'm not near as in the details as you are, Kendra, but when I look at the overall, those are the people that I walk by and go, hey, you're cool, right?
Well, and Wagaspac is cool as hell. And the thing is, you know what? You want to talk about spitting some game and having confidence. Really cool side note is that Cash Robb, who just graduated out of Oates Junior Steer Wrestling World Championship stuff, remember Cash Robb last year, the rookie of the year at the finish line, like right before, right on the backstretch, blows out his knee, and it was devastating. Well, they show up to Mandan, Cash is 15th in the world, and it's like, oh no, not again. Not only was he three and just punched his ticket to his first NFR across town to Thomas and Mack, but Wag has so much confidence in the kid who's with him. Like, Wag's back used to be with Oat. He had Cash Robb over on the Hazing side when he went at Mandan with his whole year on the line. That is like, that's where, like, being in that truck, if you can breathe the same rarefied air as somebody like that, It is not a bad thing. It's amazing. It's awesome. It's to be celebrated. And when people whack those guys, it's like Shad Mayfield's lucky. Shush. Stop.
Yeah. Yeah. That's commentary from the loser side, right? It just is. These guys are great. Deal with it. Cream rises to the top, right? You can, yes. It just does. And I'm sorry. But, you know, that's why Tommy Joe Lush is not out there competing. I'm not the cream. I'm not going to get anywhere near anybody. Never was. That's why I turned into a clown. I mean, you know,
well,
come on.
The thing about it is, you're the cream in your line of work. And the fact of the matter is, let's just say it, you're probably going to have a greater retirement fund than any cowboy, including any of them. But you're a superstar in your own corner, so don't act like...
I've been blessed, but it is cool with the NFR, the announcement of the NFR. Oh, and that's another announcement, and I don't know if I got it. Let me see if I got it. Did you read the Houston press release?
No, sir.
Well, They didn't send it to me. So I'm going to paraphrase. They added another $39,000 to every discipline. And to win it, I just heard that. I don't want to misrepresent. But Houston, so again, so talking about emotions and jealousy, rodeo committees out there, you know, that are like, well, Houston, well, let me tell you something. When you do nearly $2.5 million in prize money, you add another $40,000 times nine to your prize money. Yeah, you're going to have an impact, and you're going to have some flex in what happens in the business when you're the big boy, and they are. And
question and a comment of applause. So for one, my hope and assumption is that means it'll pay better, deeper. Well, will the winners still have 50 grand that counts? Do you know?
Yes. Everything's going to count. Is so what the insiders are telling me.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if it's going to be deeper, but you and I disagree on that a little bit. We have in the past. I know you want it to pay. Like, here's what I hear about Mandan. This is another thing I heard about Mandan. This is fascinating in the way our conversations go. Mandan, complaint. It only paid 8 holes. It should have paid 15. Oh, okay. So you want us to give half of the players money? You want us to take first place down to, so it should pay. Now, I know what you're saying. I'll let you talk about this. Well, okay. I heard that part of the some insiders told me part of the problem is it paid 8 holes, and so it was top loaded. And you know me, I'm not opposed to top loaded because I think the cream rises. Okay, but I'll let you do your thing. And if Houston is top loading this, I don't have a problem with it. What say you, Kendra?
Well, I'm saying on Houston, if the winner's still going to get 50,000 that counts, if there's a lot more added money, that means more guys are going to get paid more money. So whether it's in the go-rounds or the average, there's no downside to this. That's a great thing. So yeah, it's not like they're not top-loading it and making like, okay, now the winner gets to count 75. If the winner still gets to count 50, but then it's higher as we go. And by the way, okay, let's go to Mandan. Of course it's going to pay more holes being a one-header, but look – splitting second in the bareback riding, for example, was $12,000, and 6, 7, 8 split, almost $2,500. That's a decent rodeo all year long. So I don't know how anybody could bitch about that. And I don't agree. It doesn't look top loaded. Is that what you said, Mandan?
Well, you and I've had discussions about top loading, and here's what I'm saying, or here's my point. It should mean something to win. It shouldn't be, if you win Houston, it shouldn't be $10,000, in my opinion, $10,000 difference between who wins Houston and who got fourth place. There's a significant difference in winning Houston than placing fourth, and you should be able to show that in money and points and your path to the NFR. What do you think? You disagree? You think we need to spread it out where it doesn't really mean so much to win it, but as long as you're in the top 10, it's cool?
Well, there are other non-PRC events, and in some of them it'll drop from 100,000 down to 25,000 or something like that. And it's like, well, that seems unfortunate to me. I think let's get back to the track of the emotions, because I have one last category and then we'll move on.
I'm going to talk about emotions too. I never think we disagree
as much as you want to pick a fight with me, Big Shooter, all the time.
It's really fun. It's fun to rile up your braids. Go on. Go for your emotion.
Injuries fall under handling disappointment, which is a big emotion in rodeo. Creek Young broke his femur at Puyallup. Okay, he's 10th in the world right now. Imagine being him. I noticed that contender Josh Frost was not at Mandan. And so I checked in with him this morning. And guess what? I had no idea. He's hurt. here he is contending and contending hard. He was number one in the world in the bull riding, and his riding arm shoulder, his left shoulder, when he's riding, he says it feels pretty good, but if he lands wrong on it, it's been trying to dislocate. And, it last happened on his second bull at the X Bulls at Pendleton. And, so he just slid from first to third in the world, which is not, you know, that big of a deal, but we are not going to see him at Sioux Falls. You know, that's big as he's being, you know, passed by. And it, back to the emotions, you know, you've worked all year and then you're having this deal and it's like, what do I do? It feels pretty good when I ride. But if something bad happens at Sioux Falls and he can't go to the NFR, I mean, that's part of this emotional roller coaster ride that is being a rodeo cowboy. It's insane. Josh Frost is going to be one of those guys who schedules surgery for immediately after the NFR, torn rotator cuff, torn labrum. He will be out the first 6 months of next season. And that is super sad because he's just been, you know, killing it. And, the one little bright spot I will say is that he and Erica just had a baby girl, maybe Joan, and, you know, silver lining, which the Frosts are great at finding silver linings, is that he can be home with Erica and MJ. But that's pretty tough, you know? And so he's going to be compromised going into that 10-day war zone in Las Vegas. But, you know, there's injuries, mental to go with that.
Injuries. Whenever I make my smart ass comments about winners and losers, I have to say that I want to make sure injury should be separated from that, because I really, you know, it's no different than any other sport, right? These injuries, well, you know, they're horrible for not only the player, but the fan base, et cetera. That's why the other sports where there's guaranteed monies, you hear it all the time. Oh, is he going to get his guaranteed money? There's no guaranteed money in our sport. It'll be fantastic when there is, right? You know, where there's, you know, there's guaranteed money to play. But I wanted to touch on the emotional. So you're talking about this emotional roller coaster to the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo, correct? Because that's what everybody's going for. Let's talk about contract personnel. Okay. Emotional. There's just as much emotion in all of the contract personnel. And for those of you that are listening and, you know, may not be rodeo aficionados, the contract personnel are the people that are hired by the rodeo committees to go in, and they're the announcers, the music directors, the pickup men, the bullfighters, the shoot bosses, all of the people that put the rodeo together so that the athletes can compete. And at the NFR, I want to remind all of our listeners, at the NFR, there are certain positions that are voted on, that the membership votes on for contract personnel, but it's only a handful. It's like bullfighters and barrel men and pickup men. They get voted on to go to the NFR. And I think it's a fallacy when you're sitting back. Some of us may not realize this. You kind of suspect, or you kind of think, that the contract personnel is all about, is under that same format, but it's not. And there's a committee for the National Finals Rodeo that is made up of some PRCA members, Las Vegas, the production teams. There's a committee, and they choose a lot of contract personnel for the National Finals Rodeo, the big one, the Super Bowl. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, listener, I forgot. The big show. And I wanted to announce those that made it and address the emotion on all of those that didn't get selected by that committee to work the NFR. And so we should talk about it. It was announced that the announcers for the National Finals will be Randy Corley, Roger Mooney, Wayne Brooks, the livestock superintendent, John Barnes, Hambone Hilton, the music director, Brad Narducci, the assistant music director, assistant livestock superintendent, Terry Autry, Ryan Hudson with the saddle, being the saddle horse boss, shoot bosses, are Tony Amorell and Tom Nguyen's. Sonny Deb Backstrom will be the secretary. And that's the 19th year that Sonny Deb has been the secretary. Corley, this will be his 24th appearance at the NFR. But Sonny Deb's the secretary. And Courtney Moorhead is the assistant secretary. Timers, Nancy Dorenkamp, Michelle Corley. And the second appearance for Chris Fleener. Josh Hilton, I mentioned that. There are a lot, talk about emotions, right? There are a lot of people out there that are announcers. And when you're sitting back there going, I think my announcer or my music director that does our rodeo is so much better. Everybody has their own opinion than who's there. Just understand that that's a committee, rightfully so, that decides the contract personnel for their event. And to your point, there are contract personnel people out there, Kendra, just like those cowboys. Maybe they don't suffer injuries, but they work hard at one of the 700 small rodeos that represent the brand of the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association to make that rodeo great. And some of them feel like they'll never see the NFR, right? How do you get the NFR? You don't, unless you get that committee to like you. And is it fair? I don't know. It's up to the committee that someone is able to go 24 times to the NFR. And there are questions out there that is any one of those on the list the very best? And should the very best be at the NFR? That's up to you to talk about and decide at the water cooler. I'm not going to get into it, but just know that there is a committee that decides. Now, the barrelman gets voted on, the bullfighters get barrel. That's all fair. That's cool, right? And it's still politics. Politics are in all of this. But there is an emotional down for those people that thought, you know, maybe I'll get the NFR this year.
Let me just say it. Like, for example, when in recent times, a Garrett Urigan or an Anthony Lucia is the announcer of the year, for example, and then they're not at the NFR, there's a lot of people scratch their heads. Are they not voted announcer of the year by all the top? Is it the top 20 contestants?
I think so. Something like that. But it's a voted. It's a voted award by the membership.
Right. But it is interesting and a little bit awkward sometimes when we have people who it's universal that they are at the top of their game in all the different parts of contract personnel. I know a lot of these people are my friends too. And it's frustrating and it's very hurtful actually when they feel like they've worked to be the very top of their game and then they don't get to go to the Super Bowl. It's hard not to use the word political. And I don't mean, I'm not downing anybody who's getting it, but
it is political. How's it not hard? It's 100% political, but the world revolves around politics. You don't win everything because you're the best. You know, that's the nice thing about our sport, right? The beautiful thing about rodeo, and I think that's why it packs the credibility of the cowboy hat, I call it. And that is you want to know why the NFR is sold out? Because the NFR is about the best 15 competitors in that sport. That's what it's about. It's not about the announcers. It's really not about the music. Now, those that are in production business, we want to see it. You know, we want to see, right? We want to see that. But the truth is, if those people earn their way in, yeah, there's a lot of things about Mandan, all the things we talk about that may not be fair, but they earn their way in $1 at a time. And it's about those 15. And I'm arguing against myself. I agree with you. I would love to see the personnel maybe be voted on. Again, I don't want to walk into waters about my personal opinion on who's the best announcer. I'm not going to go there. That's my personal
opinion. No, I understand. And we're into no politics and no BS, but calling a spade a spade is our calling card. And it's hard. This reminds me a little bit. This is kind of a random analogy, but a little bit of what parents today of team roping kids are supposed to say to kids, because the way it's set up in our world now, the highest paid, the greatest opportunities, as far as the hugest payoffs, like the record payoffs at One Roping, for example, are for lower numbered roping. So what are you supposed to tell your little kid? Well, if you got into a really questionable parent that was just in it for the money, you might encourage your kid to stay at a certain number for a while till you capitalize financially. And then, you know, because it's sometimes things don't make sense, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but the handicap, how do you do that? Like, so I still have respect for the handicap system because anybody, all of
us. It has to be there. It has to be there.
When you back into that box, you're not going to rope to stay at four. Right. You just can't. It's instinctive not to. The handicap works.
And something somewhat related to this conversation and related to our last episode about instant replay, I just had a wonderful catch-up visit with Reg Camarillo, the cousin of Leo and Gerald. But he, after going to 11 NFRs, the Cowboys voted him, back when that was a thing, 7 years in a row to flag the team roping at the NFR. And I had people like T. Woolman, you know, Hall of Famers, say it was the greatest thing in the world because we all respected Reg, and he was one of us, and he knew, and he saw it all in slow motion. And I mean, all these conversations sort of overlap, but back to contract personnel, you know, that's a whole nother can of worms that we already just stepped into last episode, I suppose. But, you know, if the Cowboys voted, I mean, there was a time in our history, we also talk about how everything changes all the time and evolves, but there was a time in NFR history where the bareback riders picked the bareback judges, the team rippers picked the team ripping judges, the bulldoggers picked the bulldogging. I mean, that's pretty interesting.
Well, I would be remiss. Let me finish. I want to go through the list because I don't want anybody. Specialty Acts, Thomas Garcilaso, great family. Madison McDonald, Haley Proctor, those are the specialty acts. And then the Steer Open, the National Final Steer Open. Jody Carpenter will handle the announcer duties along with Sterrell Grover. Congratulations to both of them. This is Carper's 10th appearance at that. Grover making his second. And Shoot Boss, who one of the guys I like a lot, John Guatney, back there, the arena usher / cow roper, Dusty Moore, and Secretary Deb Davis. Timers are Tammy Braden and Jody Crippen. Drew Taylor, music director there. So I just didn't want to be remiss not to finish that list and say hats off to those people that were all selected, however they were selected. But it is emotional for those people, right?
There's no doubt.
You know, it's what you do.
This is a weird little twist, but I just saw this and I thought, wow. Madison McDonald is a badass trick rider. She's amazing. Okay, I just saw a video from several years ago at a rodeo where she's trick riding and there's this cute little boy trick riding with her. Guess who it was? Wacy Shala. Who's now an all-around contender, and he's 18 now. This was several years ago. He's this little teeny kid. He was trick riding. Isn't that cool?
It is cool. I mean, it's interesting. This is going off the topic, so we'll get back and hit feedback. But I've often said, this is the nature of our business, and it's in contract personnel. So I remember talking to the lead NBC producer when we did our first PBR, and he was like, do all of these bull riders have to root on the other bull rider? Like, he goes, that's not sport. Why is that guy helping that guy beat him? This doesn't, like, it was blowing their minds. Sports people coming into our sport, I said, that's our culture. You win because you compete well. You don't win because someone deflated your football. And then you're on TV. You don't win because of that. And it's the same way I'm getting to contract personnel. Madison McDonald has trained so many great trick riders that will, in fact, someday take her jobs. Music directors. I'll give you an example. These are things people don't realize. Chuck Bloatman, longtime friend of mine. His son now rocks it. Fantastic music director. But Chuck was one of the OGs, the originals. And I would hear someone call me and say, hey, I want to work your rodeo. I'm a music director. Oh, yeah. Well, what's your music selection? Well, Chuck Bloatman gave me his playlist. So I phoned Chuck. I'm like, Chuck, what are you doing? This has taken you 20 years to figure out, and you're handing this over to some kid with a faster finger, right? I mean, it's a mouse click, right? But it's the culture which we embrace of our sport. And just a hats off. Tomas, you know, his son is fantastic. He's going to be amazing. But these people have all trained, right? Tomas was probably instrumental in Anthony Lucia learning how to trick rope. You know, it's the culture of our sport, and it's what's endearing, right? It's what's endearing. But again, it's one of the greatest parts
of a cowboy. And another little fun one on that, Haley Proctor getting to work at the NFR is a dream come true. Her world champion bull rider husband, he just retired, like just in the last week or something, Shane Proctor.
Yeah. And Proctor was one of those back, one of my former deals was Toughest Cowboy. Proctor came in, won a ranch. He was a three event. Toughest Cowboys where you had to ride barebacks, bulls, and saddle bronc in one event. And then for the finals, you had to ride two head in each, six animals to win the ranch at Toughest Cowboy, way before its time, but really cool. He was one of the ranch winners. and by the way, I think I've said this, what's his name? The bronc rider, the crazy bronc rider. Greg, you've heard me talk about what's his name? Sundell. I'm sitting there with Don Gay at Toughest Cowboy Tryout. Sundell comes there. He's been riding bulls at World's Toughest. He's a bull rider. He comes here. He gets on a bronc and spurs its hair off. And Don Gay says, why isn't he riding broncs? I said, I don't know. He needs to be a bronc rider.
And by the way, it's cool. Shane Proctor's pretty handy calf roper too.
I know. I know. It's cool. And their little daughter. This is what makes us gravitate to our sport. But any final thoughts on point of view? And then let's hit feedback and call it a day. How about that? Any final thoughts?
I think it's great. I think safe travels to everybody. May the best man win. And I'm certainly thinking of all the moms and dads out there with kids on the bubble, because it's hard. I mean, you worry, you worry about their safety and stuff, but you know, it's also, they're all out there trying their guts out. And so to all the families, there are going to be winners and losers. There are going to be, huge upsets that are going to happen this week, and we're going to be thrilled for the winners, but our hearts also are good. Hearts also to the people who are going to get rocked out of here right at the finish line. It's going to happen. It's part of it. So here we go.
There's two things about that, and then we'll get Greg's final take, but that I think that is important. And you mentioned it earlier. Steel hardened steel, swords sharpened swords. These, you need to look for the good in your situation, because how many times have you talked about, you just did in Pendleton, the person that suffered an injury, worked their butt off, comes back and wins the event. This can also be, right, part of the bigger plan for you with an injury, dependent on your attitude towards the situation, whether you let it take your feet out from under you and you quit. And if you're listening, or whether you go, you know what? I'm going to take this injury, I'm going to become better, and I'm going to kick your asses in 6 months and do it, right? So look for the good. Look for the good in things, people. It all depends on your attitude. Now, I'm not taking away, please don't get it, the fact that you just blew a knee out and you were going to the NFR, it's heartbreaking. But if you can take that emotion and reshape it to make you that much better in the future, that's really your only option, or go sell used cars or become a saddle maker or whatever. Right.
I have a kid with 5 national finals back numbers who just sat out the entire season for 2 hip surgeries. And that's not easy on your emotions, but I have been so impressed and proud because he has stayed absolutely positive. Unless he's sneaking off somewhere and crying, which I don't think he is. He is so positive. He is doing things. He's staying busy. He's doing things he didn't have time to do. He's looking forward. He's making the most of every day. And it's, you're right. It's the mental, but we're talking about the emotions, but the mental state of mind in the arena and out is tremendous in all of life, not just rodeo, but all of life. And it's like, who do you want to be? What do you want to do? What are you going to get done? We all have things hit us in the face. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. And we never stop being parents. We can all associate to that. I thought, well, when I get my kids graduated, I'll quit worrying about them. All of us that are parents out there, we still get mad when we think our kids, even if they're 35 or not, something's not right, or we want them to do something. I guess what I figured is that's maybe why God doesn't ever quit loving us, because the same thing. You can't not be a parent. You know, you tell your 34-year-old son, drive safe. And he looks at you like, okay, Dad, I was planning on driving reckless. We just never quit being a parent. Greg, final thoughts on any of this?
Well, emotionally, I think it comes down to me is when I first started watching rodeo and being involved with rodeo, I was more about the here and now, the ride, the rope, you know, what they were doing at each event. And I've come to realize that it's more of an entire story. Like you have to look at these guys and gals and kind of follow them throughout the whole season to kind of really get the emotion that this sport can give you. And it makes great stories, and there's, you know, ups and downs, agony of defeat. You know, it's pretty amazing. It's something I never realized when I first, yeah.
Thank you to Cowboy Channel, right, for making us have a window to follow this roller coaster emotion. Hats off to Patrick Gutch and the Cowboy Channel, but they're going to get rewarded. They're going to get rewarded, right? That the value of that plan is great. And so hats off to them, but it was my fault. I'm taking full responsibility for this. We talked about this before we started the call, and we were supposed to go into, we were supposed to talk about feedback before we jumped into this, and Tommy Joe led Kendra right past it, and I don't want to not do it. So bear with us. Let's talk a little bit about no spin feedback, because we do want all of you people. We're challenging you to give us feedback, give us comments, and so we don't want to bail out of here and not hit them. And we had some really good ones from the last couple episodes. So Greg, will you take us through them and let Kendra and I answer some of their concerns, questions, or thoughts?
Sure. Episode 30 gave us a lot of feedback, and that was about the instant replay, or the, as it's called, review system that's coming up in the NFR. But one of the specific things that someone mentioned was that they think instant replay on slap call challenges are absolutely necessary. More than once, they've seen riders lose a ton of money that would have made a difference in their standings. And there was clear when there was clearly no slap. That's from our 702 area code.
So, hold on, let's talk about that.
Okay.
Kendra, you agree, right?
I do agree. And they did, you know, right after our last episode about instant replay, the NFRC did vote to go ahead and have instant replay in use at this year's NFR. And I believe the list is six things, and I guess slap is not one of them. And can we name the six off the top of our heads? We have crossfire on the team rep in the markout roll in the buck and horse events. Whether or not you broke the plane of the barrier in the timed events before starting to compete, the jerk down or whatever they're calling that in the tie down.
The livestock infraction and.
Slap is not
Did
included.
Markout,
yeah. Is there? I don't think it ever mentioned anything about the freehand.
Oh, it's got to be. We need to find that's. There's no way you could. Let's come back to that. But I guarantee you, that's a prevalent and it's in there. But let's verify that for our listeners. We will the next episode, know for sure. But slap's got to be in there. But you know. This caller says the slap. I agree that that's one. But to me, the one that has caused the most, there's a couple. that bother me the most, and that's the mark out and the crossfire. Right? Those bug me. Those bug me because there's gray area in there.
They have a no nod.
Oh yeah. So if the contestant says, yeah, I didn't nod, and then like you pull up and declare, right? And then you get a rerun.
Gotcha.
Well, have either one of you ever latched a shoe gate or popped the latch on the, no. Have either one of you ever done that? Have you done that, Greg?
I have not.
Kendra, have you?
I have. Yes.
I've had to, when I was in my PBR days and running the shoots, someone gets hurt and I got to pop latches. Well, let me tell you how hard it is to decipher a nod in bull riding. For one, this guy has a helmet on. Then some of them have mouthpieces in. Then you've got an animal that's jumping, which naturally makes the head do this. So I can't tell you how difficult it is to pop that latch correctly in the rough stock events. Imagine it, all you nose spinners. I mean, think about it. Here's what you hear. Well, was that a because his leg got squished? Was that a grunt to open the gate? And usually what happens is somebody up there goes, he's nodding. And you go, okay. Okay, sorry.
So, okay, for one, I did find the six things, and I'll just whip through them really fast. And before I do, you're right. Like Tony Amaral, you mentioned John Guatney. John Guatney's fantastic at what he does, being a shoot boss. And this came up a couple years ago when Clay Smith got wrapped up in a barrier and broke his leg, and it was absolutely horrible. The Cowboys very clearly said that job, like with the neck ropes and stuff, is vitally important to safety. There's that. And also Cowboys will say that like Tony Amaral, there's a little bit of an art form. Cause there are times when a guy maybe starts to nod and his horse moves, that Tony can kind of read the play, maybe doesn't open the chute, whatever. Anyway. Okay. Yeah. Here's the list of six. Only the six specific calls can be reviewed. Only calls made in arena by the pro officials will be reviewed. Non-calls will not be reviewed. One, right. Contestant competing before breaking the plane of the barrier. Two, crossfire in the team roping. Three, livestock infraction in the tie down. Four, mark out, spur out in the rough stock events. Obviously, bareback riding and saddle bronc riding. Five, barrier malfunctions, all timed events, which would have come up at Houston with Bo Cooper a couple years ago. And six, no nod in all events. So, I mean, I guess rough stock too. So there's nothing to do with slapping in here.
Wow. Doesn't that seem shocking?
Well, it's like, interesting. I feel like a lot of people have made comments about the 8 seconds, right? Because the back judge stops the clock, and that trumps what's on the scoreboard, right?
They start it and stop it, yeah. Well, no, the way it works is the back judge starts it, right, Greg? And any of the other ones can stop it.
Correct.
But also, I mean, and that applies. What am I thinking? That applies in the timed events too. Oh, on the 6 seconds for like, you know, if a calf stays tied.
Well, that just surprises me because the PBR has proven that that the slap replay is relevant. That's shocking. I would have bet a lot that was in there, but we'll find out why. But we don't have to beat this one up too much. That's at least we're having progress. So what do you got next, Greg?
So Larry, the non-cowboy, he has a question about livestock. He heard the term luck of the draw in rough stock events. He wanted to know if there's ever an instance where the top three or five ranked riders at the of a rodeo would ride the same animal for a win?
Well, first let me say thank you that we have novice listening to No Spin. Because this, so Larry, think about this. These animals are athletes too. And this is like a 100-yard dash for both the human and the animal. This is in rough stock. It's all out for 8 seconds for the animal too. by the way, the great animals. And so the short answer, now I might be misreading this, so I'll turn it over to Kendra for a little comment. But the short answer on this is, if what you're saying is the top three guys all ride the same horse at the end of the rodeo to see who wins so that the animal is exactly the same, the animal won't have the same trip his first as he will his third as a whole, typically not. And so I don't see that ever being the case, nor could it ever be the case. Now, that doesn't mean that that cowboy in that same rodeo or that round might not draw the same animal, that those three top three might not draw the same animal. But if it, what he means is at the end, to claim the winner, you all three ride the same bull or horse to see who wins, that can't happen, nor will it, because the animal, that's not, I don't see that happening. Now, maybe I misread this. Kendra, do you see this a different way?
I'm slightly confused by the question, and you're probably right that he's talking about the rough stock events. Obviously, there are, you know, at some places, multiple runs on the cattle, and it's a big advantage in the timed events to have the second or third run on the same calf or steer. That does happen. But I think you're probably right. He's talking about rough stock. I was a little thrown by it saying at the end of the rodeo. It's like it almost sounds like a ride off or something, which of course they're not going to all get on the same animal. No, that would not happen for sure.
But could over the course of a rodeo, maybe the top three guys score on one animal depending on the draw? Like, because most rough stock events are, or most rodeos when it comes to rough stock are one round. So if you had like a 5-day rodeo, could technically that happen?
Most of the time that the black tie is not going to buck multiple times at Mandan, for example.
And you got to understand that, Pendleton, which a lot of our listeners may not understand this, but these great bucking horses, some of them have a minimum of 10 trips. They buck 10 times in the year and then go to the NFR. So again, when there's words about abusing animals, no. You know, some of these have as little as, like, they've changed the amount of counted trips to qualify for the NFR. I don't have the specifics on it, but you know, you have to buck your horse so many times because these stock contractors only want to buck them 2 or 3 times, right? Their best trips, and then get voted on to go to the NFR. So they've put in some language that says, you know, we need to understand the durability of this animal, make sure this isn't a one-off. I'm talking about rough stock. But in point, these animals, now there's some contractors that buck their animals a lot. Used to be old school. It was, you know, black tie, he's in every short round. We're bucking him till he quits bucking. That's changed. That doesn't happen as much anymore. You've got to be one of the bigger rodeos and spend good money to get these great animals like black tie to buck at your event. So they don't buck as much as you think, you know, 10 times. So probably not going to happen. Now, in the timed events, like for you novice, it's opposite. You don't want to be the first guy to rope a fresh calf. Think about it. So it's a fresh set of calves. Every time that calf's roped, he's probably, two things happen. Not only does he probably get a little easier to handle, but you also then know what his tendencies are. Does that calf run out and go right every time? And then you, and again, I'm not the timed event expert, I'll lock Kendra, but the more times you see an animal, the better your odds are at having a better run. Is that correct, Kendra?
Well, yeah, basically, and with the exception of, like, most of the time you show up and the cattle are not fresh. So fresh means they've never, you know, been to a rodeo before. But like, for example, if you go to Cheyenne, sometimes it could be an advantage to get, you know, they're walking fresh, means they've never been to town before in the first round. Well, in the second round, it can be an advantage to get maybe a steer that either got turned out or missed or you know, something happened where they really don't take off and run very hard. It's just, it all just depends on how much the cattle have been used before. And, you know, if they have old tricks, hey, if a steer starts checking off, he's more likely to maybe completely set up the third time he goes, you know. It's just really case by case. It's pretty complicated to explain in a short time here. So,
cool. What else you got? Anything else cool, Greg?
One thing that I thought was kind of cool. We had talked about turnouts being an issue for rodeo committees, and we had one of the largest added money rodeos from a particular state reach out and asked if, you know, she would be definitely interested in talking to us. So I didn't know if we wanted to put it out there to see if there was any other committees or anybody else that would want to kind of, you know, wrangle this turnout problem that we see in rodeo.
Well, I've been a part of no less than 200 meetings that have turned into focus sessions on turnouts. And I'm happy to open up the platform to listen to committees and see if there isn't a new idea out there that would help this situation. But I can tell you that everything that has been discussed, there's not an easy solution for turnouts. There's just not. Kendra?
I'll say this. If we have a conversation about turnouts, we should have a representative from a committee, from a stock contractor, and from a contestant, because there are at least three sides to this story. And sometimes there's a pretty large disconnect, because I have tracked these down. If I go somewhere like a Cheyenne or a Salinas or something where I'm there for a few days, and I'll be like, why didn't so-and-so, like I was going to talk to so-and-so and then he didn't show up. Well, then the committee is furious. But then the committee, the stock contractor, and then I've called the cowboy. Well, I understood. So this is not a black and white issue, but everybody needs to be at the table for that conversation, I feel like.
I agree with that, and maybe we'll look at that as a platform. But I did want to correct some misinformation that NoSpin put out. Greg, remember we talked about Caldwell and the bareback riding?
Yes.
Remember when we talked about the turnouts? And you had mentioned that there was a chartered event or a chartered plane and that the bareback riders from Vegas made it there. That's not correct. There was discussions early on. So what we're talking about is Caldwell, Idaho, short go round bareback riding this summer. Greg had mentioned that there were only, what'd you say? There was only one or two
I think it was one or two. Yeah.
And there was mention that the bareback riders that went to the Las Vegas invitational event. So at the same time, there was an event in Las Vegas that was invitational, with the Run for a Million, the Yellowstone, Taylor Sheridan, there was mention that they had mentioned to the bareback riders that they would fly them, if they came to that event, that they would fly them to the rodeo that they were in. And that never turned out to be the case. Here's what really happened at Caldwell. The Franzen family, realizing the situation, John Franzen, the young son of the Franzen legacy that runs that company, he got on the phone. And he filled that bareback riding with about 4 hours of calls to make sure that Caldwell committee had bareback riders. And there was a couple, there may have been a couple guys that made it from Vegas. I don't know. But the truth is, there was no chartered plane. And I can see how you heard that there was a plane chartered, because there was discussions that, you know, that those guys were going to get flown in. They weren't. Flown in the friends and family, and they went in, they filled that bareback riding, had a good event for the Caldwell committee. Hats off to them. The bareback riders didn't get flown in there, and that's the way. So I wanted to correct that.
I would love to ask if you know this, because the first thing that I wonder about that then is, okay, they filled the short round. Did they fill it with the next guys in line based on scores in the, yes, they did.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they
rolled up, which was written, I'm sure, into the rules. They rolled it up, but still, here's what will happen. If you don't take, you know, Eva Chadwick has done it for me. You know, this is a lot of work in situations like that to get the communication out, right, to those other athletes that are eligible to short go, to find them, to get them there to ride.
And, so, okay, yeah. So if the 20th place guy rolled up into the short round and won the short and a place in the average, that all counts just like normal for world championship points?
Yes.
Interesting.
Correcting some nose spin. We don't want to give you, we want to correct it. We didn't know at the time, but that was the case. So hats off to the friends and family. Great, great livestock, great producers of shows. Good for Caldwell. I'm sure they had a great bareback riding. And you know, there was some, you know, there was supposed to be a flight. Why that flight didn't happen, I don't know, but it doesn't really matter. We wanted to make sure that you knew the real story there. And that was that. Any other feedback that we need to cover, Greg, or does that kind of capture it? I think there was a lot of feedback. Thank you all for sending us. I read through it and Kendra did. A lot of people talked about the episode with the replay. And, you know, we're happy to see not only the innovation that the WCRA brings to the table, but the fact that the PRCA has taken this seriously. We mentioned it, that they're moving slow, but that's moving slow can be cautious and doing the right things. I still don't get the slap. Sorry. Shout out to you people at the PRCA. I don't understand why you wouldn't be reviewing the slap. Maybe it's because they wanted only things they could review during the ride so that it didn't affect the production of the rodeo, because you'd have to wait till after the ride to look at the slap. But come on. That's a disqualification, right? If you have the ability to look and see that he actually did not slap the animal before 8 seconds, why the hell wouldn't you? That's a disqualification. It takes that round win away. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Bad decision.
How do you feel about that, Tommy?
There you go. All right. Well, Kendra, any last thoughts? Otherwise, we'll wrap up a really long episode. Our episodes go long. I'm sorry, folks. We got a lot to talk about. But this has been episode 31. Kendra, what you got?
Anything? I just, you know, as we roll into the last week, I wish everybody the best. And I know, you know, there will be ups, there will be downs. And I hope that people will, these are times that people will remember 30 years from now in their life, you know, when it was, you know, I had the kid that drove from Salinas to Maine to make it 1 year at this week. And this week is, but if anybody is in the position to have a shot, you're extraordinary. So, you know, hope you'll remember that, you know? And so, if it's pretty amazing that you've put yourself in a position to have a chance.
And if you're down, take that energy. Instead of going deeper, go up. Make it stronger, make you better, make you win. And last thing, and we're off air, if you see someone walking around the Governor's Cup that looks like you might be a crossdresser with a media tag, it's not me. It's not me. All right. Thank you for joining us for an hour and a half of No Spin, episode 31. We'll see you in 2 weeks. God bless all of you. Be safe out there.